I'm very happy now to welcome Sarah Gyorse and Fatima Van Hattem. They are with NewMexicoWomen.org, which is a fund initiative of the New Mexico Community Foundation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. Thank you.
So we are here today to talk about the state of women and girls in the state of New Mexico. There has been a report that NewMexicoWomen.org recently released, and the numbers aren't looking all that optimistic. There's all sorts of issues around health and obesity, depression, teenage pregnancy, domestic violence, poverty. What are we looking at in this state?
Well, NewMexicoWomen.org was created to increase the amount of philanthropic dollars that are going to women and girls in New Mexico. And in addition to serving in a philanthropic role, NewMexicoWomen.org also was hoping to get a baseline of understanding of the state of women and girls. That's the report that you're speaking of.
So if you do all kinds of initiatives to try to improve things, you know where you started.
Exactly. And because there hadn't been anything of that nature published, we thought it would be useful to get that kind of understanding. And basically, I mean, it won't come as much of a surprise to hear that there's a lack of affordable education. Poverty is a chronic problem for women and girls in the state. Healthcare is an issue. Obesity, lack of real wraparound services for women who are low income, of which many women in New Mexico are. Wraparound services meaning support systems in place so that women and girls can get an education, can overcome some of these obstacles that we're talking about. Things like transportation, things like childcare, things
right.
like, yeah.
One of the statistics that I thought was kind of amazing was that almost half of births in New Mexico are to women who did not intend to get pregnant in the first place.
Yes.
It's kind of a shocker.
Yes. This is due to lots of cultural and also it's a cultural phenomenon.
It really speaks to lack of access to healthcare as well and healthcare education. And that means, you know, from an elementary or even early childhood age up to teenage education and then beyond. And then when you're talking about rural communities, you know, access to healthcare, what does that mean? What are the healthcare providers? And then there are other barriers, you know, that are potentially language or transportation, as Sarah mentioned. So there are a lot of kind of factors that play into that, which is why, you know, the wraparound services and things that really address a multitude of things at the same time are so important.
Right. Now, some of the other problems have to do with domestic violence, drugs and alcohol abuse, and long-standing problems that go back so many generations in this state.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think a lot of these things have to do with, I mean, the way that and Sarah and I have so many discussions and really conversations, and we also have gone around the state and had community conversations with organizations working in different areas. And a lot of these longer term, really entrenched issues that you're talking about, there's sort of, in New Mexico, we're really talking about layers of, you know, historical trauma, layers of different forms of oppression and inequality, things linked to race, to class, to the way that New Mexico has developed as a state. And then surrounding those issues, there are a lot of corollary issues of how that then acts out in families and communities mm-hmm. on a daily basis. And
right.
then how that impacts women and girls, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are men and boys doing in comparison? I suppose it's parallel in some ways, but not always.
No, definitely not. I mean, there are some of our grantees actually who do work with domestic violence and assault issues for women and girls. They have some of their programs focused on creating spaces for men and boys as well, because obviously, similar to what Fatima is saying, the whole community has gone through historical trauma or has experienced these different forms of oppression. And so, but we choose to have a gender lens because so often women and girls have been left out of the equation altogether.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that we ignore the men and the boys in these issues.
So you are looking at the entire state in this report, not just the metropolitan areas. So basically every single corner of the state has been studied. That's quite a job getting this report done.
It was definitely a big, big project. And especially in our startup phase, we were in our first year of being a program at the New Mexico Community Foundation. So it was quite hefty. But like I said, we needed some kind of baseline. And hopefully this year, as we look to 2015, we want to do more discrete monographs around different issues like teen pregnancy and the economic impacts of that, or what it means to educate our girls in New Mexico, and to really get into more depth about particular issues that we feel are important.
So how does New Mexico compare to the rest of the nation? I mean, there's this sort of, people sometimes say, thank God for Louisiana, because we come in 49th and things, and there's always somebody below us, and sometimes there isn't, as in sometimes we come in 50th in education. But
most of the indicators show that we are faring not as well as other states in the nation, and along the some of the major issues are obesity, for one thing, obviously teen pregnancy.
Yeah.
But sort of on a good note, New Mexico has the highest rate of women-owned businesses for specifically Hispanic and Native women-owned businesses. And so it's not all bad news.
Right.
And I think that's a core thing we hear also when we work around the state and we speak to partners, is there is a lot of kind of bad news, a lot of ongoing entrenched issues, but that's also not the story that people only want to tell about themselves and their communities. They really want to convey what we are doing right, where we are making progress, and there are some really powerful stories of resilience and kind of overcoming some of these barriers and positive change. So there is, you know, we do struggle with that in our work too, because we're looking at really, really intense issues all over the state, but also really beautiful and profound stories of change. And it's about kind of conveying those and what is working and trying to replicate and really support those folks as well.
Tell us some of those stories of what is working.
Well, we just did a grant cycle now.
Yeah, based on all the indicators, like Fatima was saying, that we discovered through the report, we kind of step back and said, all right, where do we want to focus our limited amount of resources with our strategic grant making this year? And both to address, you know, this surgence and good trend of women-owned businesses, and also to address the needs of that focus around chronic poverty, we decided that women's economic security would be our core focus for this year. And so we launched our grant making this fall, and we are awarding 6 grants to folks who are doing that all over the state. One interesting group is called the Olay Education Fund, which does organizing and advocacy around early childhood education. So at once they're trying to create more access for children to get education that's solid and good at you know, at an early age, but also advocating on behalf of children in New Mexico. And so they're organizing the folks who own the centers, and then the educators, and then the parents. And so it's an interesting and unique model. We really wanted to support them. And then Southwest Creations, which is in Albuquerque, is also another one of our second-time grantees. And they focus on building economic security for women and girls through different kinds of work job development, but they also help the whole family. They don't just focus on the mom or the woman. They focus on the kids who are in high school, and they focus on the grandma. Like, the whole system, which is seems to be a really effective and unique model.
Yeah, and that we've seen really works, because it's really intergenerational. They're speaking to the mother and providing kind of really fair employment for women, but then they're also speaking to youth and high school students, and it's kind of a way to get them involved. And they've had really high rates of both high school and college graduation achievement, and also just the ability for women to stabilize their families. So we've seen that that's been really successful in a lot of ways.
I love it when programs work.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear these stories of a principal going in to a kind of failing school, figuring out some things, turning it around, and it doesn't take 75 years. It takes a year or two for that school to start producing kids who are excited about learning. And I think one of the things, and the three of us have talked about this at other times before we were on the air, this whole reality that people on the ground actually know what they want to do and know what they're doing more than philanthropic funders who come in from the outside and say, you should do this in your community. And
definitely,
I think it seems like a lot of what you guys' job is really listening.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
one of our initiatives is called the Community Conversations, where we are going around the state listening to both our grantees and just community people in the different counties and different regions. And we just recently completed one in Española, which is really moving. It was this, we created a space of a circle, it was really intimate, and people were sharing. We didn't want to focus on the challenges and things that aren't working for women and girls in their area. We wanted to focus on strengths and see what the dreams are. What are your dreams for women and girls? And one woman was like, I want to build a women's center. You know, she's a professor at Northern New Mexico College, and she wanted to create a women's center there that doesn't exist. And
yeah.
Another participant was interested in having a mental health
Mobile.
Yeah, going around to different communities.
Which was so brilliant to mental health, to go to different rural communities in northern New Mexico and kind of roll up and provide mental health, you know, facilities and access and destigmatize it and really kind of open that up. And these, it was almost like every single person in the room had an idea or a project that they were A, working on, and B, that they had a dream to begin working on. And so it was really like our job just to listen, because they already knew what they needed and what they wanted to do. And another really profound thing they said is, you know, we're not waiting for funds from outside. You know, we definitely need support in our community, but we also, you know, we are strong and we have what we need here. It's about mobilizing and having support to do that.
And too often when we focus on what's not working, we do forget about the dreams we have for our communities. And I think that's part of this larger social change movement, is that we're always trying to put out fires or focus on what's not working. And, oh, we don't have enough funds and scarcity. And these community conversations are an invitation to say, you know, you have the resources and you have the answers. And what do you envision? And let's build that together.
I mean, we always talk about this, and whenever the legislative session comes or whenever, you know, reports like this come out, there's always these questions and, you know, words like poverty and violence and all of that come up. And it's not that those things aren't true, but I sometimes, you know, look at families that are friends of mine that are quote-unquote poor, and sometimes they have a much more, for example, functional family structure with family members really loving and supporting each other than kind of neurotic middle class people sometimes do. I mean, there's a lot that's under the surface that's not described by these categories.
Yeah, and Fatima and I were talking about stories before we came here, and what are the stories that we're telling about the different areas of work? For instance, our focus is women and girls, and while we have this data and these statistics in this indicators report, it tells a story that's not so positive about the state of women and girls in New Mexico. But what's underneath that, exactly like you're saying, is individual lives of resiliency and beauty and community. And we want to make sure that as we're sharing the data, we're also sharing those, we're animating it with real lives and with real exchanges and relationship. And I think that serves New Mexico's women and girls better.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of really profoundly about what narrative means in creating change in a society. And, you know, in a lot of these greater social movements, whether it was abolition or now, say, with climate change, you see that there's stories that precede social change, stories of possibility and what actually can happen and what we can envision. And, you know, in our microcosm here in New Mexico, and then in our microcosm of working with women and girls, we really feel that we need to tell the stories too and reframe the narrative. And that's just as important in creating change and kind of creating the space for change to happen.
We're talking to Sarah Giorce and Fatima Van Hattem about NewMexicoWomen.org, which is part of the New Mexico Community Foundation. Now, you're telling us tell us some of the stories of some of these places and people who've kind of maybe turned their lives around.
One of the grantees we just awarded, one of the more inspiring ones, is called Spirit of Hidalgo, which is a group in Hidalgo County where a lot of families are poor and struggling in terms of economics. And so women got together there and created a cooperative. And it's really to support the infrastructure with supplemental income. But it's a women-centric and family friendly place where women can go and they can engage in the activities they're already doing maybe at home, such as cooking or doing some sewing or whatever arts and crafts they have. And it basically, they're selling that at markets and so forth. But these ideas are simple and they're happening pretty, you know, worldwide in lots of different kinds of communities. But just, it sounds like they're getting momentum and they've really increased their, not only their participation, but their funding. They're attracting lots of different funding for this simple yet very profound acts of taking their goods, selling it at a farmer's market, building off of that, creating a community garden. Now they have a kitchen set up where they can, you know, cook together, and it's a commercial kitchen, and sell their goods. So that's an example that I was inspired by recently.
And they're also, I think they try to engage girls as well, so there is an intergenerational element. And these women would already be doing this. You know, they're already growing food on their windowsills in their backyards. They've been preserving it and drying herbs and doing this already for generations. And this is a way to, A, pass that on because it's not happening now anyways, and then B, kind of monetize it, which is so important given the rural context. And then, I mean, there are a few other great examples. There's also Tres Manos, New Mexico, which is in Doña Ana County, so also in the south of New Mexico. And they provide, again, it's the same idea. It's skills that women already have or have a certain baseline in, and they're working to develop it. In this case, it's weaving and business and life skills and how to really kind of become an artisan that can be economically viable. So they're really trying to help low-income women that already have some of these skills and then augment them and really help them kind of bring those skills to market. And they're creating different items of clothing and selling in different areas. And the women receive, I think, most of the money. And so that's also a really successful model.
Very interesting. And, I mean, what you're talking about is not only creating income opportunities, but creating community and also just like excitement. Like when you're building something, when you're working on your business or whatever it is, it's just an exciting moment of one's life. And that's kind of catching, you know, all this. Because a lot of this stuff that we're talking about, like the stuff that's in your report, I mean, not all of it, but a lot of it, it's just depressing.
Yeah.
And if you like wave a report around and say, look, New Mexico is a really depressing place, it doesn't exactly make things doesn't make it easier.
It's not very compelling at all. No.
And, you know, when we have these community conversations, we always kick off by saying, you know, what are the strengths of New Mexico's women and girls? And so the women go around and they each write a strength on a post-it and we put it on the board. And what they say is so, it's beautiful and it's compelling. You know, they say they're creative, we're problem solvers, resilient, bearers of wisdom, transmitters of wisdom, connection to the earth, you know, the focal point of the family. There are just so many beautiful and powerful and empowering things that women think about women in New Mexico. So it's important to just convey that really strongly, kind of parallel to the depressing indicators report.
Yeah.
And to really like highlight the leadership of women in communities and the role that they play is very important to us.
Yeah. And the fact that women are natural leaders and are de facto leaders has been overlooked and has really only turned around within the last kind of generation or two, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's important just to note that our role within the social change movement or the women's movement in general as a community foundation is very specific. And so looking back to the second wave of feminism, as you just referred to, the Ms. Foundation was created in 1972, and that was the first woman's fund, a fund specifically dedicated to gender issues and to women and girls of its kind. And since then, 160 funds around the world have come up and been created, garnering $535 million in assets. And this is important when you're working in philanthropy to have that kind of a understanding and perspective. And to know that only 7 cents of each philanthropic dollar goes to women and girls in the U.S. And so part of our job is to educate donors, not just to do the strategic grant making and to do the report in terms of sharing thoughts and being a thought leader. But we really want to say that this it's important to invest in a woman and girl. And when you do that, you invest in a community. When women thrive, communities thrive. That's our tagline.
Right. When women thrive, communities thrive. And this seems to be a reality worldwide. And there's been so much done in developing countries about how when you do microloans to women, then little businesses start and families get healthier. And when you do micro loans to men, it doesn't work out quite as well.
Yeah, it's not the same kind of investment.
Yeah. So you are doing this campaign called Take a Stand, where you're attempting to raise a dollar for every woman and girl in the state. What's the number?
1.04 million women and girls in New Mexico. So we're trying to raise $1 for each of those.
$1 million.
Yes.
Yeah, just over.
Yes.
Excellent.
And not only that, we're also trying to raise awareness. It's a public awareness campaign as well as a fundraising campaign, so people can put women and girls on their radar around issues.
Right. Now, the New Mexico Community Foundation, the way it works is how does it work? They're not giving grants directly, but they're funding initiatives like yours, NewMexicoWomen.org?
New Mexico Community Foundation is basically the parent organization of NewMexicoWomen.org. We're a program of that organization. So basically, we are funded by them. And then any funds that we raise, we then, NewMexicoWomen.org, grants out to the two communities. And New Mexico Community Foundation has other program areas, such as rural development and education and leadership, that grants go out as well in those areas.
Okay. And so people who want to give, I mean, there are people, it's interesting, in this area where a lot of people have enough money to want to share it, and then they say, okay, where are we going to share it, and what do we want to do? And it turns out that a community foundation can really engage in dialogue with these folks and give them ideas and really engage them, because people don't always know exactly where they want to put their...
Exactly. It serves as an advisor. It serves as a place where funds can be stored. And then because the programmatic staff works in a different level, we have expertise to share around where, if you have an interest in environment, we can share where you could direct your funds. If you're interested in women and girls, that's our specific focus. So we could do that as well. But really, our role is to serve as a bridge between the communities who are working for and with, who are our partners, and then those who are philanthropic and want to give, but maybe, like you say, might not know exactly where or how to. And there's quite a concentration of wealth in the Rio Grande Corridor and different pockets of New Mexico. And so we're constantly trying to make those matches with resources with where there is a need for them.
So it's $1 million+ that you would like to raise. How are you actually going about that?
So there are a couple of ways and a couple of different elements, and we're experimenting. There's the traditional appeal and some traditional kind of appeals to our major donors and other foundations. But really, at the moment, we've kicked off a social media element kind of from now until the end of the year. And that's on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and whatever platform you may use or may not use. And the idea is to really raise awareness and also kind of appeal more broadly to generally the population in New Mexico to take a stand and help us raise this $1.04 million. Of course, the appeal is to donate, but it's also to take a picture of yourself taking a stand. So if you go on our Facebook or on our Instagram, you can see people have taken a picture with a message and their feet taking a stand. so some, women really like heels, so they'll be standing in heels. Some like boots, and they'll be standing in boots. And then we've also had plenty of men who are taking a stand for their daughters or for their grandmothers or for their, women who have changed their life. And the idea is to just put a visual on it of why are you taking a stand for New Mexico women and girls. And then in conjunction with that, we ask folks to donate and then share it kind of throughout their networks. And so it's been shared pretty widely now on Facebook and on Instagram. We're at New Mexico Women and Girls. And then also some people that, aren't on social media, they've just emailed it out to their friends. So that's another way to do it. And then kind of even more traditionally, we're sending out a general annual appeal that's in the post. So there are ways for kind of everybody to get involved, because we do recognize that intergenerationally there's different digital, knowledge and access. And then also kind of rural, urban in New Mexico, we do still have a digital divide. So we're trying to kind of do a wide appeal. But we do feel that social media is an important element just in getting young people involved and also just getting the word out. There isn't enough about New Mexican women and girls and New Mexico in general in the news. So, yeah, that's kind of the main element of the campaign at the moment.
Excellent. Well, Sarah Gyorse and Fatima Van Hattem are with NewMexicoWomen.org. It's a fund initiative of the New Mexico Community Foundation. It's actually, I mean, I guess the fund is called New Mexico Women, but it's at NewMexicoWomen.org. If anybody has questions, they can just go straight to the website. Is that the best thing to do?
Yep. NewMexicoWomen.org.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Sarah and Fatima, so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.